Well, whether you're trying for a 5K, trading for one, just trying to get in shape, an injury, of course, can prevent you from doing the activities you love. And our physical therapists are back with us to help you figure out how much activity is too much or too fast, what to do to minimize the possibility of injury. I'm Larry Mueller, and my guest, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum. Jill, good to see you.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, Lori Tine Brody.
Hello.
Jill, of course, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. So, have you experienced an injury? Do you have questions about how quickly to increase or build your training? Join in with your physical therapy questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And I'm going to mention that today our program runs till noon only. Normally we go to 12:30, but because we are covering these special ceremonies honoring Dr. Martin Luther King that's going on at the Wisconsin Capitol, we will be finished at noon today. So in the meantime, again, questions, give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. How often do you guys see people coming into you because they ran or lifted or did too much too soon?
Yeah.
We call it job security.
Exactly.
People
all
make bad
the time.
Choices.
Bad choices.
All the time. Well, you know, their heart's in the right place.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And so we appreciate that. So I really want to think about this in a couple different ways. You think about it in training. You know, I'm training for a race, or I'm training for the Berkey, or I'm training for something else. And so you lay out this training program. You can also look at that activity in terms of rehab. So if you have an injury or you had surgery, and then your goal is to get back to your previous level, in both of those situations, you have a level of current performance, you know, where you're at right now, and then you have this goal of where you want to be at the end. And you have to look at the distance between those two, you know, endpoints.
Yeah.
And then sort of figure out what the timeline is to get there. So, you know, if you're in pretty good shape and you're already active and you're exercising and you're training for something that's not too different from what you're doing, you can get yourself ready in a pretty short timeline. But if you haven't been exercising, you're not active, you're in relatively poor shape, and you set a pretty lofty goal, you're really looking at a longer timeline. And, you know, the more slowly you take that and the more carefully you lay out your activity progression, the more likely you are to be successful.
And the other thing you have to think about is not only the how well you are in cardiovascular shape, if the event or activity that you're interested in completing has a cardiovascular component, but also a musculoskeletal component. So you may be in really good cardiovascular shape because you've been swimming all winter. But just because your heart and lungs can take it doesn't mean that your muscles are ready for you to go out and run a 5K. So you have to think about all those components when you're designing your program to get from point A to point B.
You know, Nathan in Eau Claire is online and has something that relates right directly
yes.
to this. So let's go there. Nathan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm training for Eau Claire Marathon, and I've done this a couple of years. But every year it seems like I always end up with a cold or something that just knocks me back, you know, maybe 2-3 weeks. I've heard two different schools of thought that you could either just train through it or you could back off a bit and let your body recover. What would your opinions be on that?
So my opinion would be it's to back off a little bit and let your body recover. I feel like if you don't give your body an opportunity to heal, it's just going to always be there and you're not going to recover. I would also say your recovery is probably somewhat age dependent and overall health dependent. In other words, if you're younger, though, that time off or that time where you decrease your activity, maybe a few days. If you're a little bit older and your body takes a little bit longer to recover, it may be a couple weeks.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. And it doesn't mean you're not necessarily doing nothing,
right.
but you might be taking that time to focus more on stretching,
right.
on some yoga, on some
balance,
even some gentle weight training mm-hmm. Would be fine as long as you're not overtaxing your body. So you have a sort of a sweet spot of the right amount of activity, and that sweet spot can vary from one day to the next. And that sweet spot is narrowed by things like injury and illness. So the margin of error becomes smaller when you're sick. And the other thing that we just talked about with Larry is, you know, we see people often who have a virus, and it tends to manifest to some extent musculoskeletally. They have an increase in joint pain. They may have an increase in back pain if they've had a back issue. So sometimes it can flare those other musculoskeletal issues when you have a virus.
I can highly recommend not playing 18 holes if you haven't of golf if you haven't played in a couple of months and you have this terrible virus, and you may find that you can barely walk.
And you don't have
an hour after finishing.
You don't have your golf shoes with you. You don't have your own golf clubs. Yes, we identified
right.
numerous variables for Larry that could have been an issue, but Nathan, the other thing you can consider is depending on what kind of virus or illness or how your symptoms are manifesting. One of the things that anecdotally we have found success with some of the athletes is. In winter, the dry air really seems to flare them up. And so sometimes what they'll do is they will do pool running.
Mm-hmm.
They'll
pool
do
running.
Deep water running in the pool. And with the humidity and their joints aren't being impacted, they find that that's a good alternative for cross training while they are kind of letting their virus run its course.
Exactly. And you may just back down on your intensity.
Right.
So instead of pushing hard or doing high level training, you may just back down and do a lower level training, but you're still moving.
Yeah. Nathan, does that help?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate all the
time. All right. Good luck.
Good luck.
Appreciate the call very much. You know, Jean from Brookfield emailed. She's 57. She works out regularly. However, she's having difficulty building muscle. She's eaten very little meat over the last 40 years, but she does eat a little turkey now and again. Wondering if there's some protein supplement that you might recommend to help build muscle.
Well, first of all, we'll just talk about the whole where you can get your sources of protein. And before we even go down the path of I need more protein to build muscle, we can talk about other things that Jean may need to do. But where I would look first is in my diet, in sources of protein in my diet. So, and Lori's not a big meat eater, so she can probably answer this better. But beans and legumes, peanut butter, those are all good sources of protein that you can put within your diet before you go down the path of investing in a protein supplement, which may not even be what Jean needs.
Right. I've been a non-meat eater for a very long time, and I totally hear Jean's issue. It is hard to get enough protein from beans and legumes
right.
and peanut butter. I can tell you that much. You know, I eat all those things and almonds and this is and that. It's still hard to do that. So I do use a protein supplement every day that I mix with milk so I can get calcium and vitamin D, and there's protein in the milk. I would suggest speaking with your physician or a registered dietitian if this is something you're really interested in to look at your entire diet and make recommendations based upon your own physiologic profile. Then the other piece of that, which is what I think Jill is probably
right.
getting to, is weight training.
Right.
Yeah. If you're not weight training, you should be weight training. And it's not very often we say, you really should do this, but you really should do this. So at age 57, if you have not initiated a strengthening program, you should. You can weight train throughout the rest of your life into your 80s and 90s. Weight training is beneficial, particularly focusing on power training.
Well, and that could be the issue. So it could also be if she is doing some sort of resistance training that the load may not be enough. So a lot of times we're fearful of, as we age, we should be gentle with this. And there's lots of research supporting that in the mature master population. I'm just going to dance around that term nicely because I am right there with you, Jean. You can load a lot.
Yeah.
And so as long as your bones can take it, things like that, you can develop good muscle bulk.
Bone and joint. So
right.
the trade-off that I often see in people, and I'm in that age group too. Yes, ma'am. Is that the loading is sometimes aggravating to your joints. It will flare a knee problem, a hip problem, a back problem. So getting good instruction and good progression. So back to that discussion we had at the top of the show when we talked about starting where you're at and seeing a goal and trying to estimate how much time it's going to get there. When you're older, it takes a little bit longer to get there because you have to protect your joints. So we need to make sure that you're not just going in and starting on a weight training program without some consideration right. of the status of your joints.
Absolutely. There you go. And thanks very much for that email. You could email too at ideas@WPR.org or phone us at 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Marty in Campbellsport. Marty, thanks for calling.
Hi. I've got a question about, I'm not training for anything, but I've got an issue with my upper back. I seem to get it just feels sore and tight along with my upper chest. And I've got back issues. I've got arthritis up and down my spine, and I've also got a nagging cough. But I was wondering if there was some physical therapy exercises that I could do that might help alleviate this, that would really target that area of my back.
So did the chest, the upper chest pain, has all that come on since you've had the nagging cough, or have they been there prior to your cough?
After. I actually had the cough for quite a while, about 7 years, and this chest and back pain is pretty recent in the last year.
Okay. Well, if you've been coughing for 7 years, I assume you've seen your physician for this issue?
Yeah, we're still trying to track it down.
Okay. All right.
You know, a bunch of different physicians.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's one issue, and that can certainly be related to your upper back and chest issues. So, you know, it tends to pull you forward. You tend to round your shoulders, all of which will increase your back pain. So the other issue is if you're coughing, it's not uncommon to see people herniate discs from coughing, and that can be happening in your upper back. So can physical therapy help with you with this? Absolutely. It can certainly help with the musculoskeletal aspects of this issue. There are a number of exercises I can already see in my head, some things we'd want to do. We'd want to do some mobilization in your upper back. We would want to do some stretching in your chest. We'd want to do some strengthening in your upper back. Also looking at your low back and see how it comes into play with what's happening in your upper back. So certainly to get a referral, or you can call your local physical therapy clinic depending upon your insurance and see somebody direct access. And then continue to pursue the underlying cause of your cough, because sometimes it's difficult to deal with the musculoskeletal issues if you don't correct the underlying cause of the problem.
Right.
There you go, Marty. Good luck. Appreciate your call very much. We have other callers online. You could join in, too. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer today. Natalie Guyot, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues, we've been dealing a bit with minimizing injury risk when training, staying healthy for winter sports, all those things with our guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, both from the University of Wisconsin. It's great to have them with us today. Seymour in Madison will give you a chance now. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Yes. Well, my problem is I have tendonitis of my Achilles tendon, and I'm not sure whether I should be allowed to walk or not walk. I used to be a 3-mile-a-day walker, and that did me in one day. I came back from the walk in agony. I have seen my doctor, and there is a question as to whether I can walk it, take any walks at all, half a mile, a mile, or not. What I had been doing was walking about a half a mile to a mile and then icing it. My doctor doesn't think that's a good idea. I'm tempted to agree with him, but I'd like to hear from you people.
So probably what Seymour has is you might have had that inflammatory process, Seymour, that tendonitis, but probably now what you're experiencing is a little bit more of a tendinopathy or a little bit more of a chronic type condition. So for that, there's a couple things that we really need to focus on. One is flexibility, and then the other one is really good strengthening of that Achilles. So have you seen a physical therapist at all for this, Seymour?
No, I haven't.
I think it would be wonderful for you to see someone because clearly you are active. You have a goal of returning to walking 3 miles a day. You want to remain active, and this is impeding you. So if Seymour were to come into my clinic, a couple of the things I would look at is, first and foremost, why Seymour only got it on one side. That's always something that comes to mind for me. So we would like to look up and down your lower extremities just to see if there's some sort of other muscle imbalance or flexibility imbalance that precluded you from getting this on one side and fix that. And then the other thing is specific strengthening for your Achilles tendon that we call eccentrics, which is kind of a heavier loading of it to strengthen and kind of remodel the structures within your Achilles tendon.
Some of it will depend upon your age and the current status of your tendon, so that's part of the exam. Have you tried things like a heel lift or wearing a shoe with a little bit higher heel, Seymour?
I do have a heel lift, but it's not a big lift.
Okay. Is that one that you just put in since this problem occurred?
Yes.
Okay.
We went on the net and they said put in heel lifts. So I got
okay.
I really don't like to go to the net for medical advice. I think that's a mistake, but I did it this time.
Well, thank you for that. So has it made a difference?
No.
Okay. And have you put it in both shoes or just your one?
I happen to have it in both shoes because I always had it in the other shoe.
Oh, you always had it in the other shoe? And
yeah.
why is that?
It's complicated.
Oh, it's complicated?
Never mind.
I love that. Okay. So, Seymour, so all the more reason why you should get in and see somebody because clearly there's a leg length difference, there's a pelvic issue, there's a back issue, there's a something that's mechanically underlying this. Yeah. So what I can tell you is this will not go away on its own. You will not wake up one day and your Achilles feels great and out you go, nor will simply resting it for a couple weeks and then trying to go back to walking heal it. You will not recover that way. So their Achilles and patellar tendinopathies are really hard to recover from. So there are a couple of the problems, the tendinopathies, where I say you really need to see a PT and get guidance so that you can get back to doing what you want to do. So should you walk? I can't answer that question, but we really like to get people back walking as quickly as possible. So simply resting, then trying to go back to walking isn't going to work. Okay?
So do it sooner than later.
Exactly.
Seymour, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Chris in northern Wisconsin, you're up now. Thank you for calling, Chris.
Hello. I had a hysterectomy January 8th. I'm 68. Generally walk 3 miles a day. Stayed in the hospital overnight. Had no pain since. Things have been going well. I love to do Book Across the Bay cross-country skiing, middle of February. So I'm wondering, realistically, when could I start cross-country skiing? And I do have a doctor. I've seen her for the two-week checkup on Wednesday. When I saw her right after the surgery, she was like, just don't push it, and I have a 15-pound weight limit. So
the real question is going to be when your doctor releases you. So have you been back active walking and doing other kinds of activities?
I'm back doing the 3 mile.
Great.
And then I do strong bodies, but I'm doing them without. She made a point of saying, don't do the weights.
Okay.
So I do the weights, but it's very slow movement for an hour. And I am tired after. I've done it 3 times now, but I have no, the thing I'm really kind of, I'm thankful for, but a little puzzled, I have had no pain, so I'm not sure how much I listen to my body or how much I should be sensitive.
Right. Well, some of that can come from your physician and that experience that he or she has. Are you a traditional or a skater?
A traditional.
Okay. Well, that's a little better.
A slow traditional.
Yeah.
Right there with you.
Yeah. So you're more like a shuffle.
Yeah.
So again, as we said at the top of the show, you have to look at where you're at and what your goal is and what's the distance on that that
book across the bay.
Book across the bay. What? How far is that?
10K.
Okay.
And is when in February is it?
The 15th, I think. It's at Saturday after.
So it's like three, yeah, it's about like 4 weeks away.
Yeah,
it's 4 weeks
away.
Yep. It'll be close.
It'll be close, but you know, if you get the clearance from your physician, going out and trying some slow, as you said, skiing, and just seeing how it goes, I don't know. I can't say right. if you can make that or not.
Right.
But
I would start by thinking about going for time.
Right.
And kind of thinking about how long it would take you to do the book across the bay, and maybe start with, you know, knowing that, start with maybe 15 or 20 minutes of slow cross-country mm-hmm. skiing on a flat surface, something mm-hmm. you're very familiar with. Obviously, if you're doing book across the bay, there's
flat.
No hills. There's,
yep.
It's flat.
It's flat.
So, yeah, so don't worry about throwing in hills and things like that, and find a flat surface where you can do that. And I would, in all seriousness, think about an out and back. So
yeah.
if you start getting sore, you're not 20 minutes away from home, but yeah. you're closer.
Mm. Yeah.
The other thing I would do is when you follow up with your physician is just mention to he or she that you've been doing all these things that you have been doing and have successfully kind of checked them off your list, because that will help guide them in clearing you to return to other activity.
Yep.
Good luck, Chris.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let us know how you do.
Yeah. I'd love to hear back from you, Chris.
Well, I'll just keep my fingers crossed.
All right.
All right.
Sounds good.
You don't have to win the trophy.
Right. We just want you to complete it.
That's it. Thanks, Chris. Well, Scott in McGuanago, you're up now. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
In May of 2018, I ruptured my left Achilles tendon and had surgery, went through all the physical therapy. They said my flexibility was great. And then they said eventually, well, that's all we can do for you. But my issue is my left calf never, you know, got to the same size as it used to be, the same size as
yep.
my right.
Yep, right.
And when I like walking, when I start walking, I've been doing this off and on since like August of 2018 or 17, that if I walk like a quarter mile, both my hips start to hurt. People say that I still limp. I don't really notice it, but people that I see every once in a while, they go, "Oh, you're still limping."
Interesting.
So you finished therapy August of 2018?
Well, somewhere
around there.
Okay,
and you haven't been back since. It'd be reasonable to go back and have them look at you again. So, you know, things change over time, and things like your Achilles tendon and post-surgery, those things really remodel over the course of a couple of years. So it makes sense to go back and get a tune-up and see what's going on. And it may be that because of the Achilles tendon rupture and the rehab, that you subtly changed how you move and you've never corrected that. You may have developed some secondary weakness
right.
around your hip because of what was happening in your Achilles, and that piece of it has never been resolved. So going back to be re-examined and seeing where you're at now and what you need to do for the next phase would make sense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Good luck.
I agree.
Thank you again for calling, Scott. Appreciate it. Nick in Sheboygan, it's your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hi. Yeah, small problem. I'll give you the backstory real quick. And I can remember because it's Christmas Eve, so I'm really mad at my brother. But my brother and I were pretty happy with each other. And we were playing football Christmas Eve, and he pushed me and kicked a wall. And I heard my ankle snap. And my grandmother's like, "Oh, you just sprained it. Don't worry about it." So she let me sit for 24 hours, and then I went to the ER, and I shattered my ankle in 8 places.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it really hurts. And I do warehouse and I do driving. Like, luckily today I'm driving, so tomorrow I'll be able to walk. But if I'm in the warehouse and I walk probably about 6 miles in the warehouse, the next day I can't walk. And then when I move my ankle around, you can hear it snap really loud.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, I mean, I had physical therapy for a little while, and they put electricity through it, and nothing really seems to work. And you know, I had an x-ray when I had physical therapy, and they said I had an ankle of a 70-year-old.
Yeah. So did you have surgery at the time of your childhood injury? Did they fixate that fracture?
No, they just put it in a cast, and that was it.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, man. So the question is, with eight fractures, how well things were aligned and things like that.
Right.
So,
they said that I got bones floating around yet in there.
Yeah. I'm sure you do, so, as well as cartilage.
Yeah. So part of the issue with the lower leg, ankle, foot is there are so many joints, and you want to kind of align all those joints perfectly. So with the number of fractures you sustained, there's a very large possibility that just the joint congruency is not so good, which would lead to the whole I have a leg of a, or I have a foot of a of an elderly person. So then the question becomes, when you have to walk in your warehouse, do you have to wear a certain kind of shoe or boot? Do you have to wear like steel-toed or something like that?
Well, actually, I found some really nice Reebok that look like tennis shoes.
Okay.
Steel toe.
Oh.
But, and the other thing is, you know, I got back at him. I made him put his hand through a window. So,
you know. Oh, jeez. Oh, my goodness. Yikes. So Nick, this is not an ankle that's going to hold up well to walking on cold cement. So over the course of your lifetime, that's going to be a challenge for you. So, you know, as Jill and I look at each other, chances are you have really significant osteoarthritis, you know, the ankle of an 80-year-old, you probably have cartilage damage, you're poorly aligned. There's not going to be a lot that any physical therapy is going to be able to do for you.
The one thing I thought of when you're talking about this warehouse, is this a large open area where you could use, I'm thinking about one of those little wheelie things where you put your, you bend your knee to 90 degrees. I forget what those are called.
Yeah, the knee walker.
A knee walker, wheelie thing. I'm wondering if that is something he could use in the warehouse just periodically.
No, I can't do that because we move around 800-pound windows and stuff. So.
Oh, yeah. So you're not only walking around, you're loading this with, oh boy.
Yeah. That's gonna be tough. So here's what I would say. I'd say you need to be in touch with a really good orthopedic surgeon to help manage this over the course of your lifetime. You will not be very successful in a cold warehouse on cement floors carrying loads. Your ankle will not be able to do that over the course of your lifetime. Eventually, probably the most likely outcome for you would be a fusion.
A fusion or a joint replacement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where you're looking at. But in the meantime, you want to protect what you have there, and you want to protect your other side and your adjacent joints, because the classic thing we see is people like you who have this bad ankle and you continue to forge ahead. Like, I'm going to do this. I got to do this. Then your knee starts to fail. Then your hip starts to fail. Then you hurt your back because your ankle can't do what it's supposed to do. So the idea is to get in, see somebody early, and get some good advice so that you can protect your body over the course of your lifetime.
Right.
And the person you see?
I would start with an orthopedic surgeon who specializes in ankles.
Right.
Okay. There you go, Nick. Good luck. Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. Boy, lots of issues there.
Yeah.
Nancy in Milwaukee, let's go to you.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm a woman who will shortly be the age of 88. Mm-hmm. I have an immense hiatal hernia, and it's causing me rather severe breathing problems. So I'm hoping that you might be able to suggest something to help my breathing. The hiatal hernia has been there for over 40 years, and I've been told by a thoracic surgeon that it cannot be, my stomach cannot be put down below my diaphragm where it belongs. So I'm going to have to live with this.
Okay.
But I would like to be able to breathe better and do more.
I'm sure.
Right.
My brain is telling me all these things around my house that I need to do.
But
as soon as I rise to my feet, I lose my breath.
Wow. So, Nancy, have you seen respiratory therapy?
Yeah.
Are they helping you at all?
No, and I asked the thoracic surgeon about that very issue, and he said that would not. He didn't see any use in that. On the other hand, he really is encouraging me to have surgery, and in the very same breath, he tells me I cannot promise actually that you'd have any relief.
So
he's being very negative about this. About the respiratory issues.
I don't see any downside of trying that to see if they can help you. So two things, actually three things. One, your primary care physician can write you a referral. I don't know about respiratory therapy, but in the state of Wisconsin, if if you want to see a physical therapist, you do not need a doctor's referral. You just need someone to sign off on your plan of care. There are also physical therapists who are cardiorespiratory specialists. And I don't know off the top of my head if there's anybody
in Milwaukee
yeah. who is a who's a cardiorespiratory specialist. We have a physical therapist here at UW who specializes in breathing issues. But I would expect there should be somebody in Milwaukee
right.
who specializes in this. So there are physical therapists who specialize in breathing and breathing techniques or respiratory therapy, and your primary care physician can write you that referral. So I would check with my primary, especially because you want to be active. It's not like you want a referral for a new recliner so that you can sit and, and watch television. You want to be active. So I would hope that your medical team would support that.
Right. And I, there's, like Lori said, there's no, I see no risk
right.
with doing
right.
this.
Right. For sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Good luck, Nancy. Thank
yeah.
you for calling. Well, let's go to Victor in Wind Lake, Wisconsin. Hi, Victor.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I've got an issue with my back that just started probably about a month ago. I woke up one morning, and literally about a month ago, and it's just an agonizing pain. Couldn't bend, couldn't sit, you know, hurt to walk, everything. At first, I thought it was my kidneys. You know, I start drinking a ton of water, but it just keeps going and going and going. Started to see a chiropractor. She's thinking that it's my SI joint. But also at the same time, I'm also seeing a therapist because I'm going through therapy from a leg surgery. So I'm not really sure how I should be trying. It seems like nothing's working and the pain moves. It's either I can't bend over, or if I can't sit up straight for a long period of time, or I can't walk very well, and then I can walk, or I can bend, but then it hurts to sit up. You know,
what,
things of that nature.
So, Victor, you said you were seeing a physical therapist because you had leg surgery. What did you have done?
Well, let me start from the beginning. Okay, 2 years ago, I had my left knee replaced.
Okay.
And then August of last year, I broke my left leg, and it took out my lower knee implant, as well as breaking the tibia and the fibia.
Oh. Okay, okay. So that's a big deal.
Yeah.
But then they put in metal plates to hold it all together.
Okay. Oh, there's a spacer.
I'm in physical therapy for that.
So
I just woke up one morning and constant pain.
So you have a lot of issues, a lot of variables that could be contributing to this. Victor, does the pain stay in your back or does it travel?
The majority of the pain stays in my back, but
okay.
it does travel.
Where does it travel to?
It travels. It doesn't go past my knees, you know, the groin area, the hips, all the way up to my neck sometimes.
Is it, you mentioned both, is it like bilateral legs, or is it always just one leg?
Nope. Sometimes it's both. Sometimes it's just one. Sometimes it's the right. Sometimes it's the left.
And have they imaged your back?
The chiropractor took an X-ray.
Okay. So your symptoms are not consistent with any one thing. Like it's not consistent with SI joint. It's not consistent with the disc. It'd be most consistent with some sort of myofascial pain, any pain that goes up, starting at your low back and going up, is not a consistent pattern of a primary low back issue. So I would probably start with potentially more imaging of your back, or seeing your primary care physician for further workup to see what might be causing this. Because it's not consistent with the primary either SI joint or disc or facet problem,
any musculoskeletal issue. So, you know, you have no mechanism of injury. Your symptoms, like Lori said, go up and down. And I appreciate that your chiropractor took an X-ray of your lumbar spine, but we're also talking pelvic region, things like that. So there's more imaging that I think is probably indicated to rule out things. Even some blood work.
Yeah, to point in a direction, because right now, you know, you have 8 things on your differential diagnosis list. And you don't want to start, you know, like, taking one thing, then going another direction, then your symptoms change and you go someplace else. You're just going to be chasing your tail. So doing some sort of further assessment to narrow down the suspects
Agreed.
Of what's going on with your back, I think would be the first step.
Agreed.
There you go, Victor. Thank you so much for calling in. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Ray in Milwaukee, we'll go to you next. Hi, Ray.
Hi. I have a problem with recurring knee problem, and it happens when I'm skate skiing, going uphill, kind of on terminal extension on icy conditions. I'll feel a clunk, I'll get some joint pain, mostly lateral, some medial. I'll get some swelling. It'll be achy and sore for a long time. I discovered after several months the first time, it's swimming, I was able to clunk it back into place, and I had immediate relief. So my question is, what can I do to keep this from happening? It's happened 3 or 4 times, and I do get some tensor fascia lata. It feels like it'll clunk out of place, and it'll hurt, and then all of a sudden it'll clunk back in, and I'm fine again.
Yeah. You gave a very thorough description. Yeah. Lori and I were very looking at each other with how thoroughly you described things in terminal knee extension. So thank you for that good description. The both of us were wondering if you could have a meniscus tear, an arthritic change in your meniscus, and have a little meniscus tear that can be kind of flipping back and forth. Sometimes we call it a bucket handle, where it bops one way and then it flops the other way. And kind of what you described was, you know, I turn my knee and it kind of goes back into place. And so both of us were wondering if that indeed is the cause.
Yeah, especially since you have a little bit of swelling afterwards.
Right.
So, you know, usually a meniscus issue will give you a little bit of swelling. It doesn't always have to, but that's a fairly clear pattern that mm-hmm. sounds meniscus-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So the way to go then is to your primary, I assume.
Well,
no?
So it's a good question, and I'm really glad you asked that.
There's been a couple interesting studies that have come out and shown that there is no benefit after, I believe it's about 6 months, to have a meniscectomy versus conservative care for people with meniscus pathology. There's actually a study done a few years ago at the VA where they actually did a double-blinded study, and they put people in the operating room and they put the scope in, made portals. Some people got their meniscus removed, some people didn't. They didn't know if they had it removed or not, and the outcomes were the same.
Yeah.
Having said that.
Right. The take-home message is, if you're not getting a lot of symptoms from it, if it's not keeping you from doing the things you want to do, if you don't have recurrent pain and swelling that's debilitating, you leave it alone.
Right. But it may benefit you to see a physical therapist just to make sure that all of the muscles around your joint are strong enough, and make sure you have enough mobility in your hips for your skate skiing, that you're not mm-hmm. kind of overloading your leg too much and putting your knee in too much valgus, things like that. So from a mobility perspective, it'd probably be worth 1 or 2 PT visits just to make sure that you can stay in as ship shape as you can to continue these activities.
Just one of those situations where a shot of something in that area, would that be helpful?
If it really debilitated Ray from doing all of his activities, and if this happened and he said, oh my gosh, I had excruciating pain for a week and I was unable to resume my activities, I would say yes. But it sounds to me like Ray has this, you know, it kind of clunks back into place and I kind of go about my day. So I would hold off on that unless it got to the point where it was really impacting him mm-hmm. negatively.
Yeah. Yep. There yep. you go, Ray. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, one of our guests. The other, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today with our two guests from the UW, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Great to have them with us. Let's take a call from Ed in Northern Illinois next. Hi, Ed.
Hi, good afternoon. A simple question. I sleep on my side, and I noticed that, and this has been happening the last few years, after right 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I get an ache in the outside side of my shin on that side that is enough to wake me up, and I try flexing it out, and sometimes that works, but usually I have to get up, and as soon as I get up and walk around, it goes away.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, does that have to do with laying on that hip for
Jill, what do you think?
I think actually it probably has to do with your common peroneal nerve at your knee. So right behind your fibular head, kind of on that bony prominence on the outside of your knee, there's a nerve that runs really superficially. And my best guess is when you're lying on your side, that over a prolonged period of time, you're compressing that nerve. So I don't know if you would put a like a towel roll above or below it. I don't know how you could position it unless you get a certain kind of body pillow.
So a body pillow would be kind of the way to go.
Right. Yeah, I think you're just compressing that nerve a little bit by sleeping on that side. It's very superficial right at your knee. Yeah,
so what do you do with a body pillow?
Well, that a body pillow allows you to sleep in a multitude of positions rather than just on your side, front, or back. You can sleep at sort of a 45-degree mm-hmm. angle. So if you put the body pillow behind him, he could still be on his side but roll slightly onto his back so that the pressure isn't right on that fibular head.
Oh.
Or similarly, in front of him, he could roll about 45 degrees forward so that the pressure isn't, again, right on the fibular head.
Right. That would be worth a try.
Yeah, for sure. Ed, thanks for calling. Dave in Port Wing will give you a chance now. Hi, Dave.
Hi there. Greetings from the sunny south shore of Lake Superior.
Okay.
I wanted to ask about sprained ankle CTV app. That seems like such a common injury at all levels of sports. Mm-hmm. I've had the injury myself many times. I mm-hmm. witnessed it at local basketball games mm-hmm. and so I know there's some simple things that everybody should do, and I'll just take the answer off, my answer off the air. So.
Okay. Sprained ankle.
Well, first of all, I appreciate that Dave's right. There's lots of people that sprain their ankles. And what we know is that without good rehabilitation, people go on and become a chronic ankle sprainer, something called chronic ankle instability. So it's one of those things that a lot of people think they can rehab on their own, and I don't necessarily know that that's the best strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one of the keys is making sure that you have not only good strength around your ankle, but good proprioception. Mm-hmm. So I always...
What's that?
Well, proprioception is knowing where you are in space. So the example I like to give is, you know, when your foot is planted on the ground, you have a lot of information coming in through the bottom of your foot, the pressure on it, the nerve receptors, the muscles, the tendons, the joints are all providing feedback to your brain about where you are in space. However, if you're playing basketball and you're jumping up in the air, you don't have that feedback. And if, for example, that ankle you tend to sprain is rolled in too much, when you land, you are all the strength in the world is not going to save you from spraining that ankle. So your brain needs to know where your ankle is in space prior to landing. And so a physical therapist can give you some activities to work on to help you know where your ankle is in space so that when you land from that jump when you're playing basketball, you land in a position that's safe for your ankle.
One of the simplest things or simplest examples we give people when we're training proprioception and people think that they have good proprioception is to have them do like a single leg balance, a single leg squat with their eyes open versus with their eyes closed, and have them realize how much input they get visually from knowing where they are in space. So that's a really good way to kind of knock out the visual system and train a little bit more of the proprioceptors. So there's a lot that goes into ankle rehabilitation, and I wish we could just say, oh, just do these quick and dirty exercises and that will be all you need to do. But the reality of it is it's you need to see a physical therapist to get a really individual designed program that has all the components to get you back to where you need to go.
Exactly. As I always say, if it was just a matter of strengthening and you take this resistive band and do these five mm-hmm. exercises and you'll be great, we wouldn't have recurrent ankle sprains.
Right.
But we do. Yeah.
There you go. Good question, Dave. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Mary in Pewaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, yes. I was listening to the show, but I don't usually have too many problems. I've been pretty well blessed with really good health. But one thing I wanted to mention, I know they said something about the pillow between the knees.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my husband do that all the time, and I've heard that years ago. So that is a great way to help with any kind of back issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And then, and a wonderful show, but also that Dr. Lisa Allaire, she is a doctor of chiropractic, and I record her show, and if I can just plug, you know, public television, and people could record that and watch and do follow what she says. She's really good. She's very detailed, and she doesn't do anything strenuous. Some of it's even stationary work, and it's really good to help prevent or ease relatively minor back issues.
Yeah, a little kind of exercise program,
right.
that she does.
Yep.
Lisa Allaire.
Excellent.
Mary, thank you. Appreciate it. We have Steve emailed us and says he's 63, works out every day, usually twice, doing cardio, then weights. A few years ago, he decided to focus on increasing reps instead of weights, like doing a 30-pound pulley exercise with 20 to 30 reps up to 50 to 100 reps. What are your thoughts on increasing reps versus increasing the load?
Great question.
Right.
Thank you for that. So there's not a right answer. So the thoughts are both are good. So increasing repetitions is going to give you endurance. So if you have activities that require endurance, such as your upper back muscles for prolonged standing, or if you're in a type of job that requires high repetition, low resistance activity, high reps is good. High resistance is really good for building power. And power is a really important component of fitness, particularly as we get older. It's power that gets you up out of the chair. It's power that's going to help you accelerate to get across the street in a timely fashion. So a good program would have a mix of both of those.
Absolutely. And again, you would have to design that kind of what Steve's needs or goals are. So, for example, the caller that called in earlier and had mentioned working in a factory and lifting something that weighs 800 pounds, he's going to need power. He's going to need more resistance, but then lowering the repetition of that exercise or activity. So you could have some muscles in your body that require endurance and some that require more power, and you could design a program for both.
Exactly. So so some of each would be great, and focus on your goals.
Right.
Let's go to Jim in Watertown. Hi, Jim. I guess we lost Jim. Deb in Grant County, you have a quick question.
Hi. I fell on my tailbone 3 years ago, and I didn't do anything for it for almost a year. I thought, well, you know, I bruised it. It takes a long time to heal. Well, my back kept getting worse, and so I finally went. I've had actually two MRIs on my back, and they say that I have a possible insufficiency fracture on my sacrum that hasn't healed because they see edema there. And then I also have another issue where I have shooting pain going down the front of my leg when I'm on my legs too much. And so I've gone to a doctor at a spine clinic, and she pretty much says I have those two different issues going on.
Right.
And so I haven't really got any answers for why the bone hasn't healed in the sacrum and what they can do for that, because I've been getting almost more pain as time goes on with
it,
anytime I'm doing any kind of weight bearing.
So that question would be directed to the spine physician who's treating you, and it may be an issue of time. It may be an issue of nutrition.
Right.
So talking with your physician to get answers about that and what the prognosis is and if there are any other interventions for you. In the meantime, if they haven't sent you to physical therapy, that would be a great place for you to start. A pool would be a really good place for you to exercise. And one of the benefits of therapy and exercise is it helps increase blood flow to that area. It will help with the healing process. It will also help the adjacent tissues to be strong enough to support that. So sometimes you get this progressive weakness. And so instead of your muscles carrying the load of the things you do, like standing, that load gets shifted onto the skeleton and onto the bones itself. So you could be overloading your sacrum because your muscles aren't doing their job.
Right.
And on that note, we are out of time. I want to mention again that we want you to stay with us because coming up, we'll be carrying the Ideas Network for Wisconsin 40th annual tribute and ceremony honoring Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So that's coming right up. In the meantime, big thanks to Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. Tomorrow on the show, we'll answer some frequently asked tax questions as tax season approaches. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store coming up. The ceremony honoring Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'm Larry Mehler.